Okay, so last year we started this, I guess, practice. I mean, it's not a neder or a minog yet, it's only the second year, of talking about halachos of the seder right before Pesach. And I thank Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Wiederblank for inviting me to do so again. But last year we didn't get very far. He gave me I had a half hour slot, so I think we got to Karpas. So going through the Seder, Karpas is kind of early on, so we have a lot more to do. So I figured, since there are some guys here now that were here last year, we're not going to repeat from the beginning to Karpas with all the discussion of all the Minhagim. We'll just pick up where we left off and pretend that Shir was just like yesterday. It could be like yesterday. It's online, so you could listen to it, and it was a half hour, so double speed, it's only 15 minutes. So it's really, it could be very, very quick. You can catch up very, very easily. So what comes after Karpas? Yachas, right? Meaning it's a song. You know the song, right? There's only one line in the song that doesn't rhyme. How does it go? Who's going to sing? Still rhymes. Shouldn't it be Nirtzeich or something, right? So someone once said a nice verse. He said that the goal of the Seder is to get to a sense of absolute Avas Hashem, where we have where we're absolutely in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there's an expression, Ha'ahava Mikalkela Sasashura, that while normally we have certain rules in life, how we live, of etiquette, of like the way to do things, such as when you're making a poem, it's supposed to rhyme, Ha'ahava Mikalkela Sasashura, love breaks all etiquette, it breaks all boundaries. So by the time we get to Nirtza, we get to that point of love, so we forget about the rhyming. Which, by the way, that's the answer to the Kasha of why it is that we have two times that we wash in the Seder, and they're called different things, right? There's Kadesh Urchatz, and then later on there's Rachtza. They mean the same thing. They both mean washing. Why would one be called Urchatz and one be called Rachtza? And the answer is obvious. Now that I've told you, right, what's the answer? For the rhyme. It's got to fit the rhyme. It has to fit the... Meaning the whole thing was to make it rhyme, and then so it wouldn't fit otherwise. That's the Pashat Pshat. You'll hear a lot of Vartlach, but that's, I think, the simplest Pshat. Anyway, so let's move on in the Seder. So let's talk about Yachatz. So Shulchan Aruch Paskin Sim Tafayin Gimel Sivvav. That you take the middle matzah, we assume that we start the Seder with three matzahs, although it is a machlokas rishonim. Some rishonim hold it's two matzahs total. We paskin that it's three matzahs total, and we take the middle matzah, and we split that matzah into two, and half is given to somebody to wrap in a cloth and watch over until the time for the afikomen. That's how the Shulchan Aruch says it. And the other half is put back in between the two matzahs. So why do we break the matzah? The Mishnah Berurah explains that part of the mitzvah of lechemoni is eating a part of a matzah and not the whole thing. Meaning, the Gemara has a lot of different drushos from the phrase, lechem oni. Why would you call matzah lechem oni? So there are a number of different understandings of the Gemara, and one is that one of the explanations the Gemara has is, ma darko shel ani beprusa, just like an ani typically can't afford a full loaf of bread, so he only has whatever scraps he's able to get. So too, on the night of the Seder, we eat lechem oni. We eat like an ani, where we have a broken piece of bread, a broken piece of matzah. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah explains. That's why we break the matzah. Why dafka the middle one? Because the bracha is principally on that matzah. Meaning, when we're going to say the bracha for the matzah, it's specifically on that matzah. And we do it before Magid, because the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is also supposed to be done with the matzah that we're going to be using in front of us. That's another one of the drushos the Gemara has for lechem oni. What does it say? Lechem sha'onim alav dvarim harvei. That it's the lechem upon which you answer or you say a lot of things. So the whole magid is supposed to be with props in front of us, such as matzah, maror. We're supposed to have these things. That's the whole idea of a Seder plate, is that you have all these things in front of you as you're telling the story. A story is always a little more compelling when you have some sort of physical representations to be able to show, to be able to demonstrate. And that's what the Torah requires, that we should have the matzah in front of us. So which piece do you save for the afikomen, the bigger piece or the smaller piece? So the halacha is the larger piece is safe for the avikomen, because everyone is really supposed to eat two kazesim for the avikomen, so we want to start off with as much as possible. Now, you have a lot of people at your seder, not everyone's going to really be able to get two kazesim out of even the larger half of the middle matzah, but at least it gets you in a good starting position. That's what the Magen Avraham writes. Also, the main mitzvah is done with this matzah, is the afikomen. That's what the Taz says. The Taz holds that it could be that the main mitzvah of the chilas matzah is really the afikomen. So you want to save that for the bigger piece for that. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a minhag that I don't know how many people have. Maybe you'll tell me if you have this minhag. Mishnah Berurah quotes a minhag to put the matzah on your shoulder as a zeichel litzias mitzrayim. That after you break the matzah, to take the matzah and the broken matzah and put it on your shoulder, because just like we left Mitzrayim with the bread baking on our back, or the freshly baked bread that we didn't have time to allow to rise on our back, so we walk around with it on our shoulder. Kaf HaChaim, who's a Sephardic posek, in Siman Taf Ayin Gimel quotes a much more elaborate minhag, where the afikomen is strapped to the shoulder of a young child, then the young child goes out and he knocks on the door, and then they open the door for him and they say, "Who are you?" And he says, "I am a Jew." And we say, "Oh, where did you come from?" And he says, "I came from Mitzrayim." And we say, "And where are you going to?" And he says, "I'm going to Eretz Yisrael." And then we say, "And what is that you're carrying?" And he says, "It is my matzah." And then he comes to the table and says, "Manashtana." So I don't know, anyone have that minhag? Anyone ever see that minhag? No, I haven't seen it either, but it's pretty cool, right? Why not? You know, we're always looking for ways to spruce up our Seder. So that's a nice one, to be able to chayiv adam liro sasatzmo kilu hu yatsa mimitzrayim, to be able to demonstrate and act as if we left Mitzrayim. Now, the most famous thing that we do with the afikomen is hide it, right? So there is a minhag that some people refer to as stealing the afikomen. That's, you don't really find that lashon early on of stealing the afikomen. We're not Jews in general. Jews shouldn't, in general, be into stealing, right? That's not really our, you know, our Torah has what to say about it, and it's very much against the concept of stealing. So Gemara Pesachim on Daf Kuftes says that we grab matzos on the night of Pesach. Not that we steal matzos, that we grab matzos. What it sounds like, and it's what's the point, purpose of chotfinas and matzos, to grab the matzos? To keep children awake. Meaning it's a playful thing that we're grabbing matzos from one to the other, and that's a way of keeping children awake. There are many explanations of what that means, to grab the matzos. The Rambam in the seventh parak of Hilchos Chametz Matzah means that says that it means that we grab the matzah from each other in like a joking kind of manner to keep the kids entertained. And that seems to be the source of the minhag. The Chak Yaakov quotes the source of the minhag of the kids stealing the afikomen. In some families, the child steals the afikomen from the father and goes and hides it. Other cases, the father goes and hides it and the child goes and looks for it. Whatever it is, others suggest that another reason to have the children steal the avikomen is to make sure you remember to eat it, because at the end of the meal there's no bracha on it, so it's very likely you're going to forget. It's just like eat the avikomen, and it doesn't even, like, the Haggadah doesn't really leave much room for it, because there's not much to say about it in Haggadah. You just do it, so it's likely that a person at the end of his meal is going to forget. But if you have a kid who's waiting for an afikomen present, it's less likely that he's going to let you forget, because he's going to want his afikomen present. So that's how some explain that the reason for the minhag is to make sure that nobody forgets to eat the afikomen, because the kid would never let you forget. Rav Soloveitchik says, in the name of his grandfather, in the name of Reb Chaim, that he did not like this minhag of having the afikomen hidden someplace in the house where nobody knows where it is, and that, because the afikomen is supposed to be a symbolic of the Korban Pesach. The halacha by the Korban is that a Korban requires shmira. If there's a hesach hadas from a Korban, it becomes pasul. So if you have actual kachim, if you had the actual Korban Pesach, you would not be allowed to just hide it where nobody knows where it is, and the parent has no idea where it is, and only a child knows where it is. That's a lack of shmira. It's a hesach hadas, and that's something that's usher to do with the Korban Pesach. And therefore, if Soloveitchik thought it was not such a great idea for anyone to ever let it out of their sight, meaning that really the parent should make sure that he knows exactly where it is the entire time. He was not a big fan of this minhag. I don't know if that means he didn't do it. It means in his shiurim he said that he didn't love the minhag. Just last week, the president gave a shiur in the Beis Medrash, And the president said that he heard from Rav Rosenzweig Shlita that Rav Soloveitchik didn't say the passage of Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel before eating the korech, only after eating the korech, because the bracha of Al-Chilas Matzah goes on all of the matzah, including the korech matzah, so he didn't want to be mafsik with Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel. Rav Tversky Shlita, who's the Rav's grandson, happened to have been sitting right there. How many, were you guys there at that shir? So maybe some of you. The president turned to Rav Tversky and said, is that true? Am I getting it right? And Rav Tversky's like, no. He said Zeichel Mikdash Kehillel before he ate the Korech, because he did whatever it said in the Haggadah. And that's what the Haggadah said you're supposed to do. So he did what it said in the Haggadah to do. So if you look at Nefesh HaRav, Rav Shachter writes, also that Rav Soloveitchik held not to say Zeichel Mikdash Kehillel. And Rabbi Shai Shachter told me Rav Shachter does not say Zeichel Mikdash Kehillel until after he eats the Korech, again, because of that concept. So I texted the president that even though Rav Tversky said it's not what the Rav did, you heard it from Rav Zweig, I heard it from Rav Shachter, you know, so his Talmidim apparently did it. So the president said probably this is one of those things that Rav Soloveitchik did one thing and said something else in shir in terms of what he thought would be the most appropriate. Whatever you think would be the most appropriate, but we don't always get to make our own minhagim. Meaning, if that was the minhag, and that's what the Jewish people have been doing, so that's what he was going to do. My uncle once told me that Soloveitchik gave a whole shir once at Shalosh Shudas in Yeshiva. He was here for a Shabbos, and he gave a whole shir about, based on the sugi and brachos actually, about why it's very important that when you say havdalah, if you can be motzi other people in the bracha, that you really need to sit for Havdalah. And the whole shir was why you should really have to sit for Havdalah. And then after the shir was over, they benched, and then he said Havdalah, and he stood up for Havdalah. And he said, oh, will you just give a whole shir? But he said, what do you mean? My father stood for Havdalah, my grandfather stood for Havdalah, so I stand for Havdalah. You can say whatever shir you want. But anyway, that's I don't know in the Soloveitchik family whether they had this minhag or not of grabbing the Afikoman, but Soloveitchik quoted from his grandfather that he certainly didn't like this minhag. So let's move on to Magid. Now, Magid is a fulfillment of a mitzvah d'oraisa called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Most of the Monei mitzvahs count it as a mitzvah in their number. The Rambam has it as mitzvah 197. The Smag has it as mitzvah, say, number 41. The Chinuch has it as mitzvah number 21. They all count it among the Taryag mitzvahs. Some of the Rishonim don't count it as a separate mitzvah. Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlau in the Sefer HaMitzvahs that Rav Sadia Gaon, mitzvah Lamed Gimel, says that they hold that the obligation only takes effect once a child asks. So if you hold that the chiyuv of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is a conditional chiyuv, that you need a child to ask in order to trigger the chiyuv, so you could see why somebody might not count it among the mitzvos, because it could be everyone has different rules of what they count as a mitzvah, because there are really thousands of mitzvos, right? So what gets counted and what doesn't? You could imagine someone might have a rule that you're not going to count something that you don't get to trigger, that you don't get to just do, and that has to be triggered by someone else's behavior. So everyone agrees that it's a chiyuv d'oraisa though to do Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The question just is whether it counts as a mitzvah. So whenever we have a mitzvah that involves doing something, we always, almost always, not always, we almost always recite a bracha on the mitzvah. Asher kedushanu b'mitzvosu v'tzivanu al netilas ulav al mitzvah tzitzis lahaniach tefillin, right? We always, almost always, have a bracha on the mitzvah. So do we have a bracha on the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? No. So the question is, why not? Where's the bracha? It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. Where's the bracha? Asher kidshanu b'mitzvosu v'tzivanu l'saper b'yetzias Mitzrayim. How come there's no bracha on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? So Rav Shachter always told us that Rav Soloveitchik used to always quote from the commentary on the Haggadah called Maisa Nisim. The commentary called Maisa Nisim was written by the same author as the Nesivos HaMishpat. Nesivos HaMishpat is one of the great Svarim on Chosh HaMishpat. So he wrote a number of other things. He wrote commentary on Agalitas and Shas. He wrote commentary on Chumash. So in his commentary on Chumash, I think, he has this Haggadah called Maisa Nisim. It's now printed separately. And it's fundamentally really a commentary on an earlier commentary called Maisa Hashem. Rav Soloveitchik used to love to quote from the Maisa Nisim Haggadah. So what the Nesivos writes over there, as far as why it is that we don't recite a bracha on why it is that we don't recite a bracha on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is that he says, well, let's think about it. Do you say a bracha on Birchas HaMazon, a Birchas HaMitzvah, on the mitzvah of Birchas HaMazon? I mean, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa that after you eat, you're supposed to bench, right? So where's the bracha? Shouldn't there be a bracha beforehand? Baruch Ata Hashem, okay, Baruch HaMashiach, Hashem, Tzos, V'Zivanu, Levarich, Achar HaMazon. How come we don't have that? Or let's say Havdalah. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa, according to many Rishonim, to say Havdalah. How come we don't have a bracha? Asher ki d'shon, Tzos, V'Zivanu, L'havdu, B'n Kodesh, L'chol, Hinei Kel Yishol, see, or whatever, take out your guitar and, you know, whatever. Right? So how come there's no Birchsa mitzvah on that? So the Nesika says there's a principle, there's a yesod that you need to know about Birchsa mitzvahs. And that is that any mitzvah that we do through a bracha, that the mitzvah itself is a bracha, we don't recite a bracha on such a mitzvah. When the mitzvah is a bracha, you don't recite a Birchsa mitzvah on the mitzvah which itself is a bracha. That's the Nesivas Yisod. And so we don't say a bracha on Birch Samazah, we don't say a bracha on Havdalah, we don't say a bracha on Birch Samitzvah, on Kiddush, because the mitzvah itself is fulfilled through reciting a bracha. So what's the punchline? So by Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, where's the bracha? What bracha are we talking about? So the Nesivas says there's a bracha at the very end of Magid, Asher Ga'alanu. And that's a bracha that sort of covers the Magid. So there's a bracha through which we fulfill the Magid, or at least we put the finishing touches on the Magid with a bracha, and therefore it's considered a mitzvah that is fulfilled with a bracha. Rav Shachter always said it over from Rav Soloveitchik in a slightly different way. Not the bracha of Asher Ga'alanu. That's not the part that bothers us, that because that's a bracha, I can't say a bracha. Rav Soloveitchik used to say it differently. That the entire Seder is structured around four brachos from Kosos of Yayin. Right? We have four cups of wine, we say four brachos. Any Sfardim here? How many brachos do you say? What?
On the wine?
On the wine, yeah. Do you remember? What?
Four.
You say on all four? I think Sfardim just say on one and three usually, no?
No?
No? What kind of Sfardi are you? Okay, I don't know. I thought the Sfarim say only on one and on coast one and coast three, not on two and four. Okay, but anyway, so we certainly now it turns out all of us in the room say Bar Bir Gafen on each of the coasts of wine, and the entire Seder is structured around those four coasts of wine. Here, I'm not sitting here. The entire Seder is structured on those four coasts of wine. What? The Bar Bir Gafen.
No.
Just one of three. Okay, so most of I'm not. What else was I? Okay, so most of us say bracha on all four cups of wine. Hamzu Rav Shachter gave a very Rabbi Simon yesterday gave a very nice shiur about justifying the Ashkenazi minhag of saying brachas on each of the kosos. But since the entire Seder is built around four brachos that we already say, or four coasts of wine, so therefore you're not going to say a bracha on a mitzvah that's done, the way Rav Shachter says it, in a misgeret of brachos, in a framework of brachos. Where else do we do a mitzvah that's surrounded by brachos? And none of them are in Asher Ki Yishon Mitzvos V'Tzivanu. I'll give you a hint. Every morning and every night. Kriya Shema, right? Kriya Shema surrounded by brachos. It's fulfilled in a misgeret of brachos. And therefore, by Kriya Shema, we don't have a bracha, Asher Kriya Shema Mitzvah Mitzvahnu, L'Kriya Shema, right? We don't have a bracha mitzvah, because it's done in a miskeret of brachos. So that's the way Salvechik said it, slightly different than the Nesivas. The reason that that's important, is that it's slightly different than the Nesivas, is that Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, in his Haggadah, points out that the Nesivas' answer is difficult, because there is, if it's just because at the very end there's a bracha, so therefore I'm not going to say a bracha on this mitzvah. There's another mitzvah where at the very end there's a bracha, and yet we say a bracha at the beginning. Hallel is a good one, good. And another one also, that was not that long ago, about 3 weeks ago. Megillah. We have a bracha at the end of Kriyas Megillah, at least B'tzibur, the way we paskin. There's a, so, and yet we say a bracha mitzvah at the beginning of the Megillah. But according to Rav Soloveitchik, that's not a kasha. Because according to Rav Soloveitchik, it's not about the one bracha of Asher Galanu. It's about the fact that the whole Haggadah is built in the framework of brachos, and therefore there's no birchas hamitzvah. The Sfas Emes has a different approach as to why we don't say a bracha. The Sfas Emes says, no, we don't say a bracha because you don't say a bracha on mitzvos that are logical and that we would have done anyway. And when there's a massive salvation of a 3 million people strong slave nation done in a miraculous way, it's very logical that each year you should remind yourselves to thank God for such salvation. So anything that's purely logical, that even if we were not commanded to do it, because part of the Birchas HaMitzvah, the text of Birchas HaMitzvah, is Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvosa Vitzivanu, which implies that I'm doing this because Hashem commanded me to. So anytime, so Hashem is right, anytime you have a mitzvah you would have done even if God didn't command you to do it, you would not recite a bracha. So there is no bracha on the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, no Birchas HaMitzvah on the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now, Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is a little bit unique, even though Yitzias Mitzrayim is something that's on our minds every single day. Because every single day we have a mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, right? And yet somehow, and then I say there's a mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. So it's Yadua that they quote from Reb Chaim that there are three differences between the mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim and the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Everyone always says that nusach, that there are three differences between the mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim and the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. But the different Talmidim of Reb Chaim had different three, meaning like that. So it turns out that there are more than three, because they didn't get all on the same page in terms of what the three are. Right? So what are some of the differences between Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim and Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim? So let's go through six potential differences. Number one, Prima Gadim writes, Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim is accomplished just by Zechira. Zechira is something you do in your mind. Sipur is something you do with your mouth. Right? So Zechira is just remembering. Sipur is accomplished by verbalizing. That's what the Prima Gadim writes in his Psicho Kalelas to Kriya Shema Os David. Second, on the night of Pesach, we have an additional chiv, not just to say it or to tell the story, but liros es atzmo ki'ilu hu yatza mi Mitzrayim. Remember the minhag we quoted before, the matzah on the shoulder, I'm a Jew, I'm leaving Mitzrayim. We have to see ourselves as if we are leaving Mitzrayim. The rest of the year, you don't have to see yourself as anything. Just remember that there was a Yitzias Mitzrayim for our forefathers. A third difference, anyone want to suggest any differences? The rest of the year, yeah?
Maybe this is like you should tell it.
Oh, that you need to tell it to somebody else, that it's not enough to just, that it's derech she'ela u'tshuva. Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, just say it. When it comes to Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, it's supposed to be derech she'ela u'tshuva, so much so that if no one's there, if you don't even have children at the Seder to ask, right, different families go through different stages, right? So families that have like a lot of young children and it's, you know, chaotic and fun, and then the kids get older and they're all teenagers and there's, you know, and they get married and then the babies are too young to do the, so my family's at that stage right now, right? It's older teenagers, married, and there's only one grandchild who's too young. You know, I mean, she's very talented, so maybe she will, but she's one. So she's too young to really do the manashtana and participate. So even if there are no little children that are able to do that, but nevertheless, it's supposed to be done. Derech she'elu tshuva, that people have to ask each other, even if it's during COVID and an old couple was having a seder together. So the wife asks the husband, even if Nebuch, someone had to have a seder all by themselves, they ask themselves that it's done derech she'ela u'tshuva. It's done in such a way. Another unique feature of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, number four, is that we have this concept by Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim that we know by Zechira called Maschil B'gnus Mesayim B'Shevach. That Zechira Mitzrayim, you just tell the story. Or you just say, God let us out. By Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, you have to start with how downtrodden we are and conclude with our great victory, with the great praise of how we ended off the story. There's a machlokas in the Gemara how you fulfill maschil b'gnos u'masayim b'shevach. One opinion is we start with mitchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avoseinu. We go all the way back to Terach and describe how we were ovdei avodah zarah, and we conclude with achshuv kirvanu amakom l'avodaso. But now we get to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The other opinion is that the maschil b'gnos is avadim ayinu l'paro b'mitzrayim, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out, and that's the shevach that Hashem took us out with the Yad Chazaka. Which one do we do? Trick question? Both, right? All of those words should have sounded familiar from your years of being at a Jewish Passover Seder, right? Meaning we do all of those things. We say, so we're maskel b'gnosu m'sayim b'shavach. Question?
Yes, the reason we go all the way back to Tarach is because some portion gave that the 400 years started from when this company was born, kind of, so that kind of time period.
Yeah, meaning it's if it's not exactly that, it's at least along the same theme, meaning that in general, the way we view, the proper way to view history is not just about an event that happened in a moment, but we're supposed to look back at everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into place that led to that moment, and to appreciate the bigger picture retrospectively. So that's part of what we do is, even though we were only Avadim for 210 years, we look back at the 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak, or the 430 years from the Bris Mila of Asarim, right? There are three different numbers about how long Sheba Mitzrayim was. And so too, when it talks about Maskel B'Gnos, we start with how spiritually bereft we were of any spiritual meaning in our lives, and Mesayim B'Shavach, where we developed. You know, that's what some explain. Rabbeinu Menoch and now I think became a famous vart. You'll tell me if you heard it or not. But when I was younger, no one knew this vart about Karpas. Right? What does Karpas mean? What does the word actually mean when we say Karpas? Meaning we know what it is, right? It's you take a vegetable, you dip it in salt water. But what does the word karpas actually mean? Like, what is it, and what's it supposed to represent at the Seder? So, I was always told karpas is like samach perech, right? Samach is a multiple of 60, which is 600,000, and perech is hard work. But that's not what the word means. That's just a remez. Or I was told, oh, karpas is a rashi tevis for all the vegetables that you could use for karpas. Carrots, radishes, peas, and celery, right? Which is obviously not what it means, because that's English and that's Hebrew, right? So what does karpas actually mean? So karpas is a word that appears in Megillas Esther. In the Megillah. Anyone lane Megillah here? No laners of Megillah? Karpas is a word that describes a very fine cloth, a very fine linen. It also appears in Rashi on Chumash. Rashi in Parshas Vayeshev describes how Yaakov made Yosef Exonus Pasim. And Rashi writes, oh, what does it mean, Exonus Pasim? He made him an amazingly beautiful garment out of Karpas. So what do? We take Karpas, which, yeah, is also the name of a vegetable, but we dafka choose the name of a vegetable that matches Yosef's coat, and we dip it. Is Yosef's coat dipped ever? They dipped it in the blood. Meaning, before we tell the story, we want to highlight what led to the story. How did we end up in Mitzrayim? How did all this happen? Oh, it happened because brothers decided to sell Yosef and then cover up their crime so Yaakov couldn't go chase after him. And then Yosef ended up in Mitzrayim. All of this happened. All of this happened. And it started with the brothers selling Yosef. So we recall that before the story. So Rabbeinu Menoch and the Rambam, there used to be a great pulpit rabbi in England. He was in New York, actually, for a couple of years also. But he really made his name in England. He was an Irish-born rabbi by the name of Rabbi Isaac Bernstein. He used to give amazing, amazing Parsha Shiurim. And he also gave some Haggadah Shiurim. So his son, Rabbi Emanuel Bernstein, lives in Israel now, gives really wonderful shiurim as well. So Rabbi Bernstein, Zichrono Livracha, he died tragically at a young age, used to say this vart, and I think he's the one that made it famous. He's the one that, even though it's Rabbeinu Menoach, it comes from earlier on, but he discovered it, so to speak. So it's a really great vart, no? Like, you know, in terms of what karpas means. So part of the mitzvah of telling the story is appreciating the underpinnings of the story, the background to the story, what led to the whole story. Another difference is between Zechira and Sipur is that on Pesach you're supposed to talk about the mitzvahs that are relevant to that night, the Pesach matzah, maror, things like that. If you don't actually talk about the mitzvahs of the night, you're not yotzei according to Ben Rishonim Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Another, whereas by Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, you don't have to talk about matzah, you just have to tell the story every day that we got out of Mitzrayim. Another difference, and the final one, is that the mitzvah of Zechira is built into Kriyashma. right? It's built into the three parshas of Kriya Shema. The mitzvah Sipur is a standalone mitzvah. It's not built into an existing mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So those are the six differences. Which three Reb Chaim actually said, who knows? Maybe he told different Talmidim, different three. We don't know. But those are the six differences that are highlighted by the Talmidim of Reb Chaim, by the Briska Rav, and the Emek Bracha, and Rav Soloveitchik. Okay. Are women obligated in Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim? Why? It's a mitzvah shazman grama, right? Oh, so one could argue because afein hayivos hanes. So, what? So you have one the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe writes because of afein hayivos hanes, and therefore they're included in the mitzvah of Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim. Chayyadam writes, Reshechter quoted Chayyadam held that you're not allowed to eat potatoes on Pesach. He thought it was kidneys. That because you can make potato starch out of it, so that's the whole point of kidneys. So they say that in, sort of Shechter said in Europe, they used to say he called to say for Chayi Adam, it's going to be Misas Adam if because that's all they had to eat if you couldn't eat potatoes. So that minhag never caught on. So we eat potatoes on Pesach. Agav, what bracha do you make on potato kugel? You learn brachas this year, no? Let's say it's really well ground potato kugel. Shackle, Adama. So it's a stira mishum brura. You're right, whatever you said. You know, sometimes rabbis ask questions and you're wrong, whatever you say. You feel like I can't win with this guy. Whatever you said, you're right. You're all good. Because the mishum brura in one place says that if it's, the halach is if it's darko, if it's the derech for it to be ground up, so then when you eat it ground up, you make adama. The question, mishum brura in one place says that it depends on if most of the potatoes are eaten that way. If the vegetable is mostly eaten that way, and the other place says it's normal to eat it that way. So are most potatoes eaten in the context of potato kugel? No, not even close. There are a lot of potato chips that far outdo potato kugel, where it's not ground up, right? But it's certainly the derech, you know, to make latkes and kugel and things like that. And Rabbi Reisman from Torah V'das said that his Rabbi Rapav used to say shahakol on potato kugel. That he held that it had to be most. And Rabbi Belsky Zichron al-Rach also said shahakol. Any idea what your Rebbeim do? I don't think I ever asked Rav Shachter or Willig what bracha they say on potato kugel.
I was always taught Adam.
Okay. Right, so you would think then it's more recognizable if it's stringy. Rabbi Reisman said he once served Rabbi Belsky stringy potato kugel, and he still said shahakol. He couldn't believe it. He said,
similar to pulp, orange juice and pulp?
Maybe. You can still recognize what it is. Orange is not so pasha we're brachy making it either. I didn't mean to get into a whole brachas conversation over here.
Yeah, okay.
Well, we're not doing brachas now. So the Chayyadim writes that why are women chayiv in Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim? Because they're chayiv in all dalet kosos, because of afein hayivos hanes. And dalet kosos are supposed to be done al haseder. Each kos is associated with something. You don't just stop drinking four kosos. They're all associated with something. So you do it along with the mitzvos that they're associated with. Rav Shlomo Kluger in the Cheshek Shlomo says a third possibility. The pasuk obligates us in Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim and then says in the same pasuk, lo yechal chametz, that you're not supposed to eat chametz. So we can make a hekesh. Anyone who's included in the end of the pasuk of not eating chametz is also included in the beginning of the pasuk of Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim. It's a little bit difficult because you're not really supposed to make your own hekesh, your own limud. You know, Chazal are supposed to do that. We're not really supposed to do that. A fourth possibility, Minchas Chinuch says that it's a gzeres shava between Zechiras Shabbos and where it says Zachras Yom HaShabbos and Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim where it says Zachras Yom HaShar Yitzasim Mitzrayim. So even though that's really about the mitzvah of Zachira, Tzitzis Mitzrayim, close enough. It's all, and if they're chayvins in Zachira, they're chayvins in Sipur as well. Rav Yashiv, Zichron Levracha, said that the rules of women being part of Mitzvah Shosman Grama are only for mitzvahs after Matan Torah. Mitzvah that was given to us before Matan Torah, they're going to be chayiv in all those mitzvahs, even if it's Mitzvah Shosman Grama. Bottom line is, the whole machlokas is why women are chayiv in Sipur, Tzitzis Mitzrayim, not if women are chayiv in Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim. It's a big mistake that a lot of people make, that a woman very often will be sitting at the Seder for all the kids singing Manishtana and all the Vortloch that you have on Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Rei and Ikiven Shivim Shana and on the Chachamim singing in Bnei Brak and all these filler things, these other things. Manishtana is actually a very critical part of that Gada, but I'm saying all this other stuff that's not really a critical part of that Gada. And then when it gets down to actually doing the Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim, where we're actually darshaning the psukim that talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we're saying Pesach, Matzah, Maror, and we're doing those things, those three things that you can't be yotzei the mitzvah without, then a lot of times women are in the kitchen and they're preparing for the Shulchan Aruch and they're not participating at all. And that's a real problem, because women also have an obligation in Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So they should be careful at the very least to read ahead, at the very least to make sure to read those sections of the Haggadah. They shouldn't miss that part of the Haggadah. The text of the Haggadah is something that we should honor. It's a sacred, long-standing text from the days of the Talayim. Okay, so we do the Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And then after Magid, what comes after Magid? Rachza. So Rachza, the Gemara Maseches Pesachim discusses that we wash again for bread, because maybe your hands touch something in between. So even though you washed already for the karpas, for the davar shetibul b'lo b'mashka, you're going to wash again for bread. And since the whole concern is, the whole reason we're washing again is because you might have had a hesach hadas in between, the Bir Halacha writes, if you didn't have a hesach hadas in between and you were very careful and you didn't touch anything, then maybe you would not be able to wash again with a bracha, the Bir Halacha writes. But most of the time, of course, we had a hesach hadas in between. The Magid takes a long, long time. So by the time, in my family, the minhag is, I think it's a Yekesha minhag, that by the first washing, only the leader of the Seder washes, and not everyone at the table washes. So then, of course, everyone's going to have to wash again because they didn't wash the first time. Anyone else have that minute? I have a collection of strange. Are you yucky in anything?
Normally, my mother's parents and they are. So.
And they're yuckies. Okay, so you have a good explanation for it. I have no explanation for it. I don't know where we got it from. I mean, an uncle is yucky, but I don't think that counts. Yeah.
You say, like, Hallel, that you should have, like, Anta and Kavana when you wash them.
By
Hallel? Meaning, like, not to be yotzei the dad's bracha and hallel, and you say a bracha and hallel.
Right.
Should you, like, have, like,
a
mind to not
be yotzei? Yeah, meaning on the first, well, the first one we don't say bracha anyway. Meaning that when we wash for karpas, we don't say bracha anyway. I think that's the joke that they say, that it says that a guy washed for karpas and he said baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kirishonu Mitzvos V'Tzivanu. And he stopped, and they're like, why didn't you? What are you doing? He said, it says in the Haggadah, don't say Al Natilas Yadayim. Okay, all right. Meaning, you're not supposed to say any part of the bracha, right? So, but at the second time you wash, when you're washing for the actual matzah, you do recite the bracha. There is a practice that many people have, that someone else should wash your hands as a way of showing a sense of chayrus. So many people have that practice, by the first washing at least, that someone else brings them the water for them to wash their hands, you know, instead of them going to the sink. That was a practice in my family for the first washing, that they bring a basin with a washing cup, because that's derech chayrus, at least for the person who's getting it brought to them, not so much for the person who's doing the bringing. But anyway, that's a practice I'm having. There's a shailin hilchos nida. If a wife is in nida, can she bring the basin for her husband to wash his hands? Because one of the harchakos of nida, it says in Yerideas and Kuvtzadi Hey, is that a woman is not allowed to harchatzus panav yadav ragla. She's not allowed to wash his hands, face, or feet. So it's a question whether it's even permissible for her to prepare the water for him to wash his hands, face, or feet. And over here, he's washing his hands and she's bringing the water, so that's a shaila. Then we move on to, okay, the washing is pretty self-explanatory though. So now we move on to motzi matzah. How much do you have to eat of matzah? So the mitzvah is you have to eat a kazayis, right? A kazayis of matzah. There may be a kiyu mitzvah in eating more than a kazayis. How big is a kazayis of matzah? So Rav Shachter always downplays the size of a kazayis. Like people very often have big chumras when it comes to gezayis and matzah, and they end up stuffing their face with, and especially the halacha is ideally you're supposed to swallow the kezayis all at one time. So if you have a giant kezayis and matzah, you hold the kezayis and matzah, it's like 2/3 of a hand shmura matzah, and you stuff it all in your mouth, and you're still chewing on it all, and then you try to swallow it at one time, so that could be dangerous. I also find that it could be very discouraging for other people who may otherwise want to do the mitzvah salayla. Meaning everyone's looking around at you, because you're the B'nai Torah, you know what to do. So if they see that you're just stuffing your face with matzah and you look like a pig and they're gonna have to call out salah because of the amount of matzah you're sticking in your face, so everyone's gonna be like, all right, I'm not doing that. And they'll take like a little piece and they won't even try for a kezayis. So Shachter often says that the sheer kezayis of matzah is about the size of your palm. About the size of it. It depends on the thickness or how thick or thin the matzah is. So, you know, about the size of your palm is on an average thick matzah, a matzah of average thickness is a kezayis. If you want to be extra machmir, you could do the size of your whole hand, counting your fingers. And that's for sure a kezayis of matzah. Again, it depends on the thickness of the matzah. If you're using Sephardi matzahs, do we use Sephardi matzahs in your house? No, you don't do that. I do, actually. But that's not a family minute. It's just something I started doing because I think it's cool. So if you have a thicker matzah, so you don't need as much for a kezayis. But one should eat a kezayis of matzah. There is a minag that the Chayyadim quotes to kiss the matzah. Why would we do that? Well, do you kiss your tzitzis, your tefillin? Meaning we kiss mitzvah sometimes. Some people kiss their tzitzis and their tefillin. And that's quoted in the Ramah, in Simon Chav Dalit, in Aruch Chaim, right? In Hilchus Tzitzis, I think, the Ramah quotes that you're supposed to kiss the tzitzis, and Hilchus Tefillin, that you kiss the tefillin. So there is such such a practice. What? To what? Well, it depends. In middle of Kriya Shema, Rav Shachter writes in the Memor of Salvezhik, that in middle of Kriya Shema not to, but at the end of Kriya Shema you might as well. Why not? And when you're putting them on, after you say the bracha, you know, people kiss them, I think. It's a common practice. So the Rama quotes that it's minik to kiss the tzitzis. So matzahs are also a mitzvah. So we kiss the... in fact, the Chassam Sofer writes in the Hashematos to his tshuvas that matzah is the only mitzvah, that mitzvah da'oraisa of eating, that a particular item that we still have. Meaning, do we have any other mitzvah da'oraisa where you're supposed to eat a particular food? Marar bizmanazah is only derabanan. The fact that you eat three meals on Shabbos, but there's no menu that's required by the Torah. You could choose to eat whatever you want. You want gefilte fish, you can have gefilte fish. You want chalent, you can have chalent. It's the only mitzvah da'oraisa, yeah? Right. We don't have that anymore, unfortunately. Meaning, so the Chassam Sofer said, so we view matzah as like representing all the old mitzvahs of achila. It used to be about karbanos. There were lots of things that you had a mitzvah to eat. What's that? So basar on chagim is right. Is a zecher to the karbanos? Right. Whether that's a mitzvah daraisa to dafki eat basar on yom tovim, not so clear. Not so clear at all. The mitzvah of matzah is a chiyuv on women. The Rambam writes children who are old enough to eat a kezayis matzah should also eat matzah. What if a child is too small to get down a kezayis of matzah? So then Rav Shlomo Zalman says you should tell him not to say the bracha of alechilas matzah, because if he's not going to eat a kezayis, you don't want him to say a bracha levatala. And kezayis means kezayis bichtei achilas pras. Rav Shachter often points out, what does that phrase mean? Kezayis bichtei achilas pras. You have to eat a kezayis in the amount of time that it normally takes to eat a pras. How much bigger is a pras than a kezayis? So a pras means a half a loaf of bread, right? A loaf of bread is assumed to have 6 kebetzim in it. A kezayis on the large end is considered a chatzi beitza, a half a beitza. So if a whole loaf of bread is 6 kebetzim, a half a loaf of bread, let's do math, 3 kebetzim, right? If a kezayis is half a beitza, so how big is a pras in comparison to a kezayis? What's the ratio? It's a 6-to-1 ratio. So you're supposed to eat the kazayis of matzah in the amount of time that it would normally take you to eat 6 times the volume of the kazayis of matzah, which means you don't need to rush, right? You don't need to stuff it in your face so fast. You can take your time and eat the kazayis of matzah at a normal pace, and you'll have plenty of time, it will be in plenty of time to be able to eat it within the shear of kedei achilas pras. There is a machlokas in the achronim, how we measure kedei achilas pras, the amount of time that it takes to eat 3 beitzim of bread, or the amount of time that it takes to eat 3 beitzim of whatever food you're eating. Because matzah is a lot more difficult to chew and to digest than bread is. Rav Shach is makel on this. He thinks that we can assume, not like the Mishnah Berurah, that you can take the amount of time that it takes to eat 3 kazesim of matzah. So you eat 3 kebetim of matzah. So you need to eat 1 kazayis of matzah in the amount of time that a normal person would take to eat 3 kibbetzim of matzah, which is plenty of time. So Rav Shachter always makes a big deal about not stuffing your face too much, because if you do that, you could choke. It could be, he said, I think the reason he says is that someone in Washington Heights, Hatzalah, told them years ago that their busiest night of the year is the Seder night, because people are choking all over the place. So it's just, I mean, the Seder night diet is not like the healthiest diet, you know. It's like 4 cups of wine, and like, especially if you're doing the horseradish from the maror, which I guess we should get to also to discuss that. The Shulchan Aruch writes that ideally you should eat 2 kazeis of matzah for a variety of reasons. Magen Avraham says 1 for amotzi and 1 for the mitzvah. The Mishnah Berurah says because it's machlokas which matzah the alachlis matzah goes on, so you eat a kazayis of each of the matzahs. So whatever it is, the minig is if you can to try to eat 2 kazaysim by the alachlis matzah, you end up eating a lot of matzah the night of the seder if you're doing it right. Because if you're eating 2 kazaysim at alachlis matzah, then you're eating another kazayis for korech, then you're eating another 2 kazaysim for the afikomen, so it's a lot of matzah. Especially if you have big kazesim. So that's why it's important to highlight you don't need to have the biggest kazesim, the size of your palm. I remember when I was in Rosh Chodesh, we wanted to get him on record, because, you know, saying that how small a kazayis is. So we had the recorder there, and we're like, how small is a kazayis? He said, about this big. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, you mean like 3 inches by 3 inches? He said, yeah, 3 inches by 3 inches. Good, okay, there we go, we got it.
Does
kazayis
change
with achilas pras? Yeah, so then it's within 2 achilas prases, it's not within 1. The Mishnah Berurah says that ideally you should swallow 1 kazayis at a time, meaning keep it in your mouth until you get to a kazayis and then swallow it all at once if you can. Chayadam thinks it's best to swallow 2 kazayis at a time. Again, don't push it. The Rambam holds that you dip the matzah in charoses also. Do you do that, Sephardi? No? The Rambam holds you dip matzah in charoses also. In fact, that's a question in the Rambam's Manishtana, right? What's the Manishtana says that tonight we dip shtei pamim, right? And yet, according to the Rambam, it should be 3. I'll give you another one. In the Simanim of the Seder, we talked about washing twice. There's a third one also. Doesn't even make it. How come that one doesn't get mentioned? All right, questions to think about. Bring up at the Seder. How come you don't mention Mayim Achronim? We're being machmir to wash for a vegetable. We're not going to be machmir to wash Mayim Achronim. Like, well, why would that be the case? Right? Anyway, so we don't dip the matzah. Ashkenazim don't dip the matzah in charoses. We don't even dip the matzah in salt. By Sfarim, they do dip it in salt. Ashkenazim, we don't. Okay, now, let's talk a little bit about maror. So the Rambam writes that maror is only a mitzvah d'oraisa when we had a carbon pesach. Since we don't have a carbon pesach nowadays, maror is not d'oraisa, it's only mitrabanan. And we do it as a zecher to the mikdash. Are women obligated in maror? Yeah, women are obligated in Mara too. They're obligated in the mitzvah derabanan of Mara bizman hazeh. The Shulchan Aruch, Mishbur explains, because Vafin Hoibos Anes includes Mara also. The Aruch HaShulchan says, Kol Tikun Rabbanan Ken Doraisa Tikun. And then whenever the Rabbanan make a din, they always pattern it after Din Doraisa. The Din Doraisa is that, meaning when we have a Karban Pesach, they're certainly obligated in Mara. So they're obligated in Mara bizman hazeh as well. How much Mara do you need to eat? How much Mara? One kazayis. And then an additional kazayis with the korech, right? But one kazayis on its own. A lot of people make a mistake. The Gemara says that you dip the Mara in charoses, then you shake off the charoses, and you eat the Mara. A lot of times people will pile charoses on the Mara. That's not proper. You're not supposed to do that. There is a chumrah that Rav Moshe Feinstein had to eat a kazayis of charoses later, during the Suda. So in my family, when people start piling the charoses on the maror, if it's people who would listen to me, which is a very limited group, I would say, you know, man, don't pile it on. That's not what you're supposed to do with the maror. But I love charoses. Bubby's charoses is the best. Bubby's charoses is the best. Have it afterwards. Go have a full kazayis. It's a nice chumrah to be yotzei shitas harambam that you're supposed, or one of the shitas harambam. The Rambam has a stira, but in one place shitas harambam that you're supposed to eat a kazayis of charoses. So good, you'll have a kazayis of charoses later on. But for the maror, it could cost you the mitzvah of maror because you're supposed to have tam maror. You're supposed to taste the maror, and if you can't taste the maror because all you're tasting is the charoses, so that's a problem. You're not supposed to pile the charoses onto the maror. So you just dip the maror in the charoses and you shake it off. What do you use for maror? What's the vegetable that one is supposed to use for maror? So the Mishnah Maseches Pesachim gives five options of vegetables that you could use for maror. And the Gemara explains that those options are given in order of preference. That the most preferable is the first one on the list. And the first one on the list is romaine lettuce. Right, that's the most preferred vegetable to use for maror. Where does horseradish fit on the list? So if it's on the list, it's a machlokas whether it's on the list. If it's on the list, it's lower down. It's like 3 or 4, I don't remember exactly. Right, it's lower down on the list. So clearly romaine lettuce is the better option to use for maror than horseradish. Also, a lot of times if a person is using horseradish, they're not going to eat a kazayis, and then they're for sure not yotzei the mitzvah. Now, the Mishnah says that if there are 5 different vegetables you can use for maror, and you have a quarter of a kazayis of one, a quarter of a kazayis of another, and a half a kazayis of a third, that's fine. They can all combine together. So some people have the practice of taking lettuce and putting some horseradish on it, right? So they mix the two, and according to the Mishnah, that's perfectly fine. However, if you hold that horseradish isn't really on the list, so then it's not a great idea, right? Because then you're adding something foreign to your maror, and it's better to have just lettuce. So that's a discussion, at least, to be had, whether horseradish... But the tradition in Judaism has been for centuries already that we assume horseradish is on the list of acceptable vegetables to use for maror. I personally only use lettuce. What's the problem with lettuce? Why wouldn't everyone use lettuce? Seems like so much smarter, you know, definitely easier. So one issue is bugs. You need to, but I have a salad for lunch every single day. I know I don't look like it, but I have a salad for a lot of dressing. And dessert. But I have a salad for lunch every single day. Apparently, I trust my wife to check for the bugs. I'm way too lazy to do it myself. But I totally. So I have lettuce every single day. Right, I have lettuce every single day, so I'm not worried about the bugs. And we'll wash it, and we'll get clean lettuce. What other concern might there be? It's not bitter, right? So that kasha was asked already by the Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi said, how can it be lettuce? Lettuce isn't bitter. We know what lettuce is. So the Yerushalmi says, it's not bitter if you get fresh lettuce. But if you leave it in the ground, past the time it's supposed to be left in the ground, it turns nasty bitter. It gets really gross and bitter. So that's what it means that it's bitter. So the Chazanish understood that to mean that the way to fulfill the mitzvah of maror with lettuce is by leaving it in the ground until it gets nasty bitter, and then and only picking it then. You can't even find such lettuce in stores, right? As soon as it starts to turn bad, they throw it out. And they're certainly not picking it at a time where it's already bitter. So the Chazon Ish held lettuce is not ideal. Most other poskim assumes not like the Chazon Ish. Rav Shachter certainly assumes not like the Chazon Ish. What the Yerushalmi meant to say is that the reason you can call it Marar is because one of its character traits is that it would get bitter. But not that you have to wait for it to actually get bitter. You could eat it when it's sweet, when it's delicious, when it's the same as your salad would taste at any other time of the year. So you can just have a regular piece of romaine lettuce. Just make sure you have a gazayas of it. One nice big leaf of romaine lettuce with the stalk is normally plenty for gazayas. Again, you dip it into the charoses, you shake it off, and you eat it that way. Rav Shachter doesn't like using horseradish for another reason also. He thinks that horseradish is not bitter. What do you mean it's not bitter? It's nasty. So he says, yeah, nasty is not bitter. It's what we call charif. Charif is sharpness. That's different than bitterness, right? An endive is bitter, but horseradish is not. Another issue that sometimes people run into with horseradish is that they don't realize, they just take a jar and they open up a jar of horseradish and they eat some. Even the white one, let alone the red one, is a problem, because that horseradish has already been soaked in some sort of brine or pickling or something to affect its taste. That's for sure no good for the mitzvah of Mar. Are we, is this for here, lunch? Are we supposed to, no? Where is it supposed to be? I think there's a lunch on the third floor.
So you want to have some chairs?
519.
It says
519.
Don't, definitely don't take the pizza, but here, you put it down and then we'll figure out where it's supposed to go.
I'll figure it out.
Right, thank you. I assume this is for the guys that are here. Here, you could take a look at that. All right. We are just about out of time, so anything else? Any questions before we... Yeah? Now, there is a halacha that if you don't have any of the available vegetables, that you can use any bitter vegetable. But if you have the actual vegetables that are mentioned in the Mishnah, so certainly you're supposed to use those. Any other Seder questions we didn't get to?
If you hold like the Chazon Ish, can you use romaine lettuce for carbos?
Probably, yes. Unless you're concerned about the bugs. I think they say Rav Aaron Cutler used to use iceberg lettuce because he was worried about the bugs. But that's a chiddush, that iceberg lettuce counts as marah. But the Varan Kala, they say, held that iceberg lettuce counts as marah. I think the standard sheet and poskim is not that way. It's not the musub that iceberg lettuce counts. Rav Shachter has a minhag that by korech, he points out, does not mean a sandwich. It means a wrap. So the thing is, it's hard for us to wrap our matzah around anything, because the second you start trying to wrap it, it just cracks, right? So that's why we call it a sandwich, because we just turn it into a sandwich. Rav Shachter will take his marar and wrap it around his matzah. Meaning, if you use lettuce can wrap around the matzah. So what I do is, I don't do that, I just use Sephardi matzahs. And they wrap very nicely, because they're soft matzahs. So for korech, I'll use Sephardi matzah. But I know you don't use it.
I don't know what that is.
You don't even know what it is?
Yeah,
they're like, they're soft, they're like a wrap.
That's what you use.
They're awesome.
Really?
Matzah pizza, game changer. with that kind of matzah. Okay, everyone have a chag kosher v'sameach. Sorry, I got to run to my next year.